You're listening to KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep, here with local and statewide news. The organization that helps oversee federal fisheries off Alaska's coast is scaling back operations due to uncertainty over federal funding. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council meets five times a year to help set fishing policies. That includes things like quotas, regulations, and bycatch restrictions. But federal budget cuts under President Donald Trump have whittled down the organization's resources, forcing them to scale back their activities. Executive Director David Witherell says they've only received about two-thirds of their annual funding. Usually, they have it all by March.
This is a highly unusual situation that we're in. We can normally be able to plan our meeting schedule for the year and not have to worry that, you know, the council offices might have to close because we run out of funds to pay staff.
Witherell says they're starting from zero with no rollover from the previous year. He says the council has been told to expect another installment once Congress finalizes a federal spending plan, but for now, there's no timeline and no guarantee.
The funding this year has been coming in dribs and drabs, and it's making it challenging to reserve meeting spaces and to know that we have the funds to host a meeting.
The council is dropping to only four meetings next year and will hold its next meeting in October online. In a statement, the council said they're also cutting back on travel and other expenses. They hope to hold an in-person meeting in December, but even that will depend on whether more funding comes through. Commercial fisheries rely on council recommendations in order to open. The council warns that its December schedule is overloaded with time-sensitive materials like chum salmon bycatch. A Juneau man died after falling roughly 150 feet while hiking near Salmon Creek Dam on Saturday afternoon. According to Alaska State Troopers, 64-year-old William Milks fell after tripping and losing footing while hiking with a group on the trail. Emergency responders rappelled down to the location where he fell and attempted to rescue him. Troopers say he died from his injuries. The man's body was recovered and sent to the state's medical examiner's office in Anchorage. His family has been notified. The Salmon Creek Dam is located about 3 miles up the Salmon Creek Valley. It is a popular hiking route for Juneau locals. Juneau Mountain Rescue, Alaska State Troopers, and Temsco helicopters conducted the emergency response and recovery effort. Southeast Alaska broke records for rainfall last month, and the general rule of thumb at the Blind Slough Hydroelectric Plant near Petersburg is the more rain, the more power, the better. But Petersburg Borough Utility Director Carl Hagerman says sometimes there is such a thing as too much rain. The hydro plant uses water from a dam at Crystal Lake to generate power, and a record-breaking precipitation Mitkoff Island got in May caused Crystal Lake to spill over earlier this month.
Whenever you're managing a hydroelectric lake, you don't ever want it to spill. You want to use every drop you get out of the sky to make power with. So it's unfortunate when you spill, but this year, there was just too much water to deal with.
Hagerman says the lake spills over about once a year, flowing down Crystal Creek into Blind Slough. But this was more water than usual. So they turned up the plant's power production to the highest it's ever been, and that still wasn't enough to harness all of the extra water. After the water is used by the plant, it flows out to the neighboring Crystal Lake Salmon Hatchery. Bill Gass is the production manager for the company that operates the hatchery. He says hatchery staff notice a spike in nitrogen levels in the water, and they were concerned the plant's power increase could be causing it. Too much nitrogen in the water can cause disease and death for salmon.
It's analogous to divers getting the bends. Put nitrogen under pressure, then strange things start happening.
No salmon died at the hatchery this time, but Gass says its staff asked the hydroplant to turn the power back down as a precaution. The hydroelectric plant at Crystal Lake is one of several in Southeast Alaska that shares its water source with a hatchery. Gass says most of the time having hydroplant neighbors is a good thing.
It's a really good way to maximize the benefit of a resource. The vast majority of time, it works perfectly. They get what they need. We get what we need, and everybody's happy.
It's a balancing act between the hydroplant and hatchery's respective goals of generating as much power as possible and keeping the salmon healthy. If any compromises need to be made the next time the lake spills, Hagerman and Gass say the hydroplant and hatchery teams will continue to work together. And the Alaska Department of Corrections is holding dozens of immigration detainees in an Anchorage jail and violating federal standards by denying them access to their attorneys and consulates and, in one incident, subjecting them to pepper spray. That's what attorneys representing some of the men told Alaska legislators at a hearing on Friday. Immigration attorney Cindy Woods of the ACLU of Alaska has spoken to five of the men. She testified that the detainees have been held in lockdown for substantial periods since ICE transferred 41 men from Washington State to Alaska on June 8th.
Individuals are being held 2 to 3 in a cell with one open-air toilet in a cell. In cells that are holding 3 people, one person must sleep on the floor, abutting a toilet that cannot be flushed on demand, but is flushed twice an hour.
The hearing shows how President Trump's crackdown on immigration is straining federal holding facilities and that Alaska prisons aren't an easy substitute. The Anchorage Correctional Complex has a contract to house federal detainees. In early June, ICE transferred the men to Anchorage to relieve overcrowding at a federal immigration facility near Tacoma. Democratic Representative Andrew Gray of Anchorage called the hearing. He repeatedly cited the ways the Department of Corrections is violating humane standards established during the first Trump administration for immigration detainees. Alaska Corrections Commissioner Jen Winkleman was the first witness. She said the detention was going well after a number of what she called bumps in the road. She said guards deployed pepper spray not at anyone but in the room to enforce a lockdown. Then Winkleman heard from attorneys that pepper spray had sent several detainees into respiratory distress, that they weren't allowed to change clothes for days, and that they were not allowed to access their belongings to retrieve phone numbers. In at least one instance, when an attorney did get through to his client, guards ended the call after 30 minutes, even though the federal standards for ICE detainees require unlimited calls. Winkleman told legislators several times as she was unaware of the specifics.
I will commit to this committee to look into that. This is the first I've heard of it.
Gray and other legislators questioned why the state agreed to accept the ICE detainees, which they said exposed the state to possible lawsuits. And last week, the Western Alaska community of Kwikluk burst with activity as Orthodox pilgrims from around the world came to honor the first ever Yupik saint. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, the glorification of Saint Olga brought together those drawn to her message of healing from afar and the people of the region for whom she has long held a saint-like status.
Shots ring out over the Kwikluk River as a mass of pilgrims lining the muddy banks sing a hymn of blessing on the eve of the summer solstice. At last, leaders of the Orthodox Church have arrived in Kwikluk for the glorification of Saint Olga, the first ever Yupik saint and the first female Orthodox saint in North America. For Kwikluk, the glorification is a long-awaited honor for Olinka Oksumkuk Michael or Matushka Olga, a local midwife who gained a reputation as a gifted healer of deep-seated trauma during her life. Since her death in 1979, accounts of her miracles have spread throughout the Orthodox world, culminating in this historic moment. In the crumbling cemetery of the old St. Nicholas Russian Orthodox Church, priests set St. Olga's wooden casket on blocks, just feet from the spot where they exhumed her remains 7 months earlier. As local priest Father Vasily Fisher explains, before St. Olga can be venerated as a saint, her final funeral rite, or panahida, must be performed. Going forward, the day of her death will be celebrated instead as her birth as a saint.
Everything is done as if going backwards. They come back to the church. And in the presence of life, our faith is about life. Sainthood is about life.
For thou art the resurrection and the life and the repose of thy servant Matushka Olga, who is fallen asleep, O Christ our God.
Some gathered in the cemetery have tears in their eyes. Others pat beads of sweat from their foreheads. Matushka Olga's descendants stand transfixed among headscarved pilgrims from nearby villages and from as far away as Romania and Australia. The head of the Orthodox Church in America, Metropolitan Tikhon, is here from Washington, D.C. As Archbishop Alexei of Alaska reads a passage from the Book of Psalms, a sudden gust of wind from nowhere cuts through the otherwise still afternoon. It's hard to not get swept up in the feeling that something miraculous is afoot.
Their soul shall dwell with the blessed.
After the funeral rite, a procession featuring flowing robes, golden banners, puffs of incense, and a couple curious village dogs bears the casket along a short dusty track to the church in the section of Kwikluk known as downtown. During the four-hour service that follows, it is standing room only, which works out well in a religious tradition that doesn't make use of pews. The chanting and choreography, what Archbishop Alexei refers to as an elaborate, beautiful dance, ends when St. Olga's casket is opened for pilgrims to kiss her sacred relics and receive her blessing. One of Matushka Olga's nieces, Bertha Howard, sums up her memories of her aunt succinctly. She helped, she was compassionate.
That's all I could say.
For Matushka Olga's granddaughter, Adan Winkelmann, the inclusion of Yuktun in many of the glorification services is a highlight.
It's very cool to see actual Yuktun words, to recognize the Yupik people, to use the word elders in song. I've never heard that anywhere else in any of our venerating any other saint.
As pilgrims file by outside the church, Winkelmann says the scene is a lot to process.
I'm finding the whole exhuming of her body, the whole glorification, canonization, very strange because she was an actual person to me that would hold me and piggyback me, and we would sit and eat together, or I would sit and watch her sew.
For many others, Matushka Olga has become Saint Olga, Matushka of all Alaska, a symbol of compassion, modesty, and empathy that appears to resonate just as much across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta as it does the world. In Kuitluk, I'm Evan Erickson.
And in Juneau, it's 58 degrees and overcast. This is KTOO.